This past weekend, Pope Francis beatified an entire family, including their unborn child. We'll look at the theological implications of an unborn and therefore unbaptized child being raised to the altars. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to gently tap that like button and destroy the subscribe button, or however you're supposed to do it these days. Like and subscribe to the channel. We really appreciate it. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. Also encourage people to subscribe to our newsletter, our email newsletter. Every day you'll get right into your inbox the articles that have been posted up that morning. It's an easy way to find out what we're writing about. If you just go to the crisismagazine.com website, you'll see right there. It'll probably pop up asking you to subscribe, or if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see you can do it there as well. Okay, so let's get started here. So this past Sunday, September 10th, Pope Francis beatified the Ulmas, which a Polish family of nine who were murdered by the Nazis for hiding Jews. So Joseph and Victoria Ulma were declared martyrs along with their seven children in December of 2022. Now, real quick, just to make sure everybody's clear, beatification is a step before canonization. And really, beatification is a declaration that that whoever is beatified is worthy of veneration, has been raised to the altar, so to speak. It's really more of almost a geographical difference than anything else. When you're beatified, it's basically saying you can have public veneration of these people on a local level, like, for example, in their diocese, or if, let's say, they were a member of a religious order, their religious order. It's not really on the universal calendar. It's not for universal veneration. Not that somebody outside of these areas can't venerate these people, but it's not being put on the universal calendar for the whole church to venerate. That would be canonization. So this declaration, though, as far as declaring what it does about the person or persons who are beatified, is essentially the same as their canonization. Now, the Ulmas had, at their death, they had six born children, ages two to eight. And Mrs. Ulma was pregnant, and she was due pretty soon. Now, one thing I found out, like, literally about 5 minutes before I went on air, which might change the entire episode, is that there is some confusion about whether or not she gave birth during the trauma of her martyrdom, that she went into premature labor and possibly the baby was even born. I don't know exactly. I mean, because the news reports I read were very confusing, because first they were saying an unborn child. There's even an icon that you saw at the beginning of this episode of a baby, you know, the halos in the womb. So first it was unborn. Then they were saying, like, kind of in the process of being born. I mean, what does that mean? Was the baby literally halfway out or something? I mean, and others said that the baby was born. So I don't know the details exactly. I think everything I say today, though, is applicable, whether or not the baby was somewhat born or not. So essentially, though, I think, though, it being an unborn child, I do think that's an interesting discussion. Now, it would be the first time an unborn child has been beatified, if it was actually unborn, and actually the first time a whole family is beatified together. Now, one thing I want to note, in our culture today, people get very excited about the idea of, this is the first time this a woman did this, the first time a Black person did this, or something like that. And we very much like the first time, the innovation, something new and innovative. That's not a Catholic attitude when it comes to the faith. We actually should always question things that are the first time. If somebody says, this is the first time a Pope has ever done X, our Catholic sense, our spidey sense, so to speak, as a Catholic, should be, is this a good thing or not? And almost to the point of thinking that might not be a good thing. Not saying it always is a bad thing. If it's the first time the Pope has traveled to, I don't know, Alaska, okay, it's not a good thing or bad thing. It's just, it's fine, good for the people of Alaska, I guess. It's not a big deal. But when it comes to, like, actual decisions that are made, and so I think it's legitimate here to look at this beatification and discuss whether or not it's legitimate and what does it really say. Now, basically, before the changes made to the canonization process in 1981, essentially a person would not be canonized if they were below the age of reason. If they had not reached a certain maturity, I think is the language used, but basically that was assumed to be the age of reason. You weren't even considered for canonization. I'm talking about the formal process that developed over the centuries in the church. Now, they made a number of changes to the canonization process. I think it was 1981 is when the latest changes were. And they kind of dropped that. And so it was definitely now open for people who are younger to potentially be canonized. Now, the youngest canonized saints in the modern era are Francisco and Jacinta, the visionaries of Fatima. They were ages 10 and 9, respectively, when they were canonized. So they'd obviously reached the age of reason. I do not know, and I'm sure all the people who follow Fatima very well probably know this, if they had received First Communion or not. That's somewhat irrelevant to whether or not they could be canonized. But they had reached the age of reason. Now, the canonization process has started on a girl named Antonietta Meo, M-E-O, and she was age 6 at her death. And there's a canonization process, and she was not a martyr. There's a canonization process underway for her. I think she's still just at the first stages of it. And that would be maybe even more interesting than this story, because can you have somebody canonized who has not even reached the age of reason? Because how much do they choose the things that they do? Now, it's obviously through God's grace, through miracles, a young child, even before the age of reason, could decide to do something great and be a great model. I'm not saying that's not possible, but I think that's an interesting situation. Now, when it comes to martyrs, of course, the holy innocents are actually officially defined as martyrs for the faith. The holy innocents, of course, being the young boys in Bethlehem, 2 years and younger, who were killed by King Herod when he heard that the Messiah had been born. And so they were killed for Christ, and they are considered martyrs. So obviously, even though they had not reached the age of reason, they are canonized martyrs of the church. And the other thing that I think we should remember is that children can share in the operative faith of their parents. What I mean by that is, even before a child reaches the age of reason, they are connected to their parents in a very special way. And so the parents' faith, I don't want to say it transfers to them, but it does. It's almost like an umbrella effect. And this is actually the theology behind baptizing infants, in a sense. The reason you can baptize an infant, because obviously we don't believe as Catholics what some Protestants believe, that you have to make a decision yourself, obviously be the age of reason, make the decision yourself before you're baptized, is because the children are sharing in the operative faith. So these are some principles as we look into this. Now, one thing I do want to note is that none of this happens in a vacuum. The reality is we currently have a pope who plays somewhat fast and loose with how things are done and the theological implications of it. He shoots from the hip a lot. He says a lot of things and does a lot of things that I don't think he actually thinks through all the implications of them. And so even when something like this happens, I think it's understandable that we would say, hold on a second, let's think this through before we just immediately say, oh, this is a great thing or this is a bad thing. I mean, either way, I think we have to think it through first before we just jump to conclusions, because this pope does do things without really thinking them out often. Now, so the first thing I want to talk about when it comes to this is that the question always arises when it comes to canonizations and beatifications, but especially canonizations. Are they infallible? I know I believe this for all of my Catholic life. I accepted this as true all my Catholic life until recently, and I don't necessarily reject it. However, there is more of a debate about it. I thought it was a slam dunk case. The Catholic Church had actually taught that canonizations are infallible, end of story. But that's actually not true. It is the predominant common theological opinion of many saints, theologians, scholars, that canonizations are infallible. But that does not make it Catholic doctrine. There are many things that can be thought by many people to be Catholic teaching that aren't actually Catholic teaching. And there's a great book on this, just to want to mention, I have it right here. Are Canonizations Infallible? Revisiting a Disputed Question. It's edited by Peter Kwasniewski. And it's a number of essays by some great scholars on this issue. And I think that they make some very good points that we shouldn't be too quick to jump to the idea of that canonizations are infallible, meaning that if somebody is canonized, they are definitely with certainty in heaven. I don't think that's something we can say in every situation necessarily. I think it's a debatable point. And I thought one of the arguments made was interesting because some people say that the church has to be infallible on this because otherwise you could be praying for the intercession of somebody who's in hell, for their intercession, and they're actually in hell. Now, I think, though, that's not necessarily the major problem some people think it is. And the example is used of, think about if you go to adoration and you're adoring the host. What if the host actually was not validly consecrated, that it wasn't actually a valid host? So it's just a piece of bread up there. And so the idea, though, is that if you do that, you have not committed any sin. Your certainty of faith is that the host can become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ through the words of consecration by the priest at Mass. And so you have a faith, a certainty of faith, that this is definitely true, that God will always transfigure a host into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ if all the valid the matter, form, and everything like that are present. But that doesn't mean you have a certainty of faith, a certainty that that host that you're adoring is definitely consecrated. You might have a very strong reason to believe it, but you just can't know that. There's just no way you can know that for absolute sure. I guess if you're the priest who consecrated it, you could. But for most people, that's just not possible. Now, God would not consider this a sin on your part if you're adoring this host because you're adoring Jesus Christ in what you think is the Blessed Sacrament. And so, therefore, likewise, if you are praying for the intercession of somebody you think is in heaven, but they're actually not, because of just maybe bad information that was given to the Pope, to the Vatican about a person that they had no way of knowing it wasn't true and they were canonized, but they actually were in hell, you're not committing a sin by doing that. And in fact, God would obviously still hear your prayers and consider them valid prayers on your part. Now, so that's the first thing, though. It's like it should not be a scandal if we say something to the effect of maybe a beatification or a canonization is not absolutely infallible, that we can question it. Now, the second thing we have to consideration is something I already mentioned was just the program methodology of Pope Francis. It's clear that he's using some canonizations for ideological reasons. I mean, I think it's clear that the canonizations of all the popes since Vatican II, even the process being started for John Paul I, shows a clear decision to kind of weaponize the canonization office in order to promote his understanding of Vatican II. And so I think that we need to recognize that. And so again, it's valid to call into question these things. Now, the question is, can an unborn child become a canonized saint? By the way, a few people have joined later jumped into the chat saying, I thought the baby was born. I brought that up at the beginning that there is debate about whether or not it was born. Was it unborn in the process of being born or already born when the baby died? And I think there's some dispute about that. She definitely, it sounds like she was, she did go into some type of premature labor, but I don't know how definitive it is whether or not it was born or unborn. But we're going to talk about even if the baby was unborn. Now, this issue can be a touchy emotional subject for people, the status of an unborn child who dies, because many of us have experienced miscarriages in our life. And so once we start talking about the eternal destination of an unborn child who dies, whether it be through abortion or miscarriage or something like this, an attack on the mother that kills the child as well, I think we get into just a very emotional arena, and I'm right there with it. My wife had three miscarriages, and you know, it's very tough. And I'm one to say, everybody wants to think or at least ask, is my baby in heaven? The baby that my wife miscarried or I miscarried, if you're the mother, or if it died, you know, some other reason, is it in heaven? And I think the honest answer is we just don't know. I know it's not been taught by the church definitively that any unborn child who dies is definitely in heaven. That is not the teaching of the Catholic Church. I do think that for a long time there was the belief in limbo, and it's still a valid belief that a Catholic can have. The idea that a child who dies before their baptism and before the age of reason, so they've committed no actual sins, that they would go to a kind of a limbo, which would not be hell. It would be natural happiness, but it wouldn't be the glorified happiness of heaven. And that was commonly believed by most Catholics for a very, very long time. So long, and by so many, that I think we simply can't dismiss it as, oh, we don't think that anymore. When you have that many Catholics believing something, including all the way up to the Pope, for so long, we have to at least consider it as a possibility. And so, but we can't just automatically say that unborn children who die automatically go to heaven. I think that's something that undermines the importance of baptism. The fact is, baptism is the normative way in which somebody receives sanctifying grace, in which they are able to go to heaven. So obviously, somebody's baptized, water baptized, they die 2 seconds later, they're automatically going to heaven. But an unborn child obviously hasn't been baptized. And so therefore, what's their status? So when it comes to most unborn children, whether it's through miscarriage or abortion, I just think we have to acknowledge that we don't know. And as hard as that might be for people to hear, I think we just have to acknowledge we don't know. I think we can take comfort in the mercy of God. We can hope in the mercy of God, but we also trust in his judgment in all these matters. Now, what about though in this case? And so if the unborn child simply died through natural means, obviously it would not be canonized. If a child who hasn't reached the age of reason has died through ordinary means, not martyrdom, I think it's very difficult to then be canonized. The reason being is, especially a very young baby, we have to remember what canonization is. It's not just simply a statement that somebody is in heaven. A lot of people think that's all it's saying. No, canonization is a statement by the church that this person was a model, a witness to the faith, and a model for others to follow. Obviously, a two-year-old baby, in a certain sense, who dies through natural causes, how can that person be a model and a witness to the faith? And so normally, in a non-martyrdom situation, I don't see how you could have a person, a baby in this case, be a canonized saint. However, in this case, we are talking about martyrdom. The parents and were declared martyrs of the faith, and the other children were declared martyrs, sharing the operative faith of the mother, of the parents. And so therefore, this child died for one reason only, because his or her parents were martyred. And they therefore were martyred as well. And this is a teaching that goes all the way back to the beginning of the church, the idea of baptism by blood, that there is a baptism, that the normative way in which we are saved is through water baptism. However, a person who dies for Christ, they've literally given everything for Christ. And so they receive what is considered a baptism of blood. And so they are able, in fact, they will go to heaven. If somebody is martyred, truly martyred, they automatically go straight to heaven. I mean, that's a pretty fundamental teaching of church, because you have given a complete and total gift of self, which purges you of all the temporal effects of sin, of forgiveness of sins, everything, because you can't give anything more than your life. And so in this case, we have a situation in which this baby, unborn or maybe halfway born or just born, was martyred. That baby gave up her life or his life for Christ, unknowingly, of course, by the baby. But the same is true of the 2-year-old who died. And just like the holy innocents, they didn't know what they were giving up their life for, but they did nonetheless. And so while I would agree that we need to always be a little bit circumspect about decisions made by today's Vatican, by the Pope, when it comes to canonizations and other things like that, I think in this case, it is a clear-cut case where, yes, this child, even if unborn, can be considered legitimately beatified, legitimately one day maybe even canonized, and can be a model for us. And it especially does send a certain model of a certain model for today's world in which we do not consider the unborn fully human. That's what most, you know, many people think today. And that's why we have such abortion on demand. And so by having an unborn child beatified, that really does tell us something. It does is a witness to the faith, I guess is the best way to put it, that you definitely can, that God has mercy, that God is present even in the unborn. I think that's something that we're seeing in this situation, that God is present even in this baby who is probably going through labor, in the process of being born when she is killed. And so I really think that something we can be sure of in this case, that this is a baptism. Now, one thing I want to bring up from the chat that somebody asked, what if the martyr is outside the church? I've read somewhere that if you're outside the church, martyrdom does not avail them. Well, note I said that if somebody is truly martyred, then they go to heaven. And so I think we would have to then decide, is the person truly martyred? Did they die for Christ? I would argue that even if they were outside, like, for example, the Coptic martyrs from a few years ago, the men who were beheaded by Muslim terrorists for their faith in Jesus Christ, they are Coptic Christians. They are not in communion with the Catholic Church. They are part of the Orthodox churches. I would say they are martyrs, yes, because they gave their lives up for Christ, and so they are martyrs. I think there would be some dispute about that among theologians, and I grant that, but I think in general, though, somebody who gives up their life for Christ is a martyr. But my statement I made before was simply, if they are a martyr, then they are definitely going straight to heaven. I think we define martyr as somebody who truly died for Christ. Okay, so I think I'm going to end it there, but I think that it's an interesting discussion, even if the baby was actually born beforehand, of what canonization means, of what martyrdom means, and of the connection between children and their parents. And I think we can ask for the intercession of the Olma family for our families, because I think it's a wonderful example of this large family. They had 6 kids, 1 on the way, that even in that situation, they did not cave to the pressures of the world. I think a lot of times we hear that today where it's like, well, they can't really stand up for their faith. They can't really not do this or do that because he has to support his family, or it could potentially be a harm to their family. So they have to be prudent. I think this family, the Olma family, shows that faithfulness to Christ is what we're really being asked for. That's what really is being asked. There is a virtue of prudence, but ultimately we cannot deny Christ. We cannot deny following him for any reason whatsoever, even if it means the death of ourselves and our wife and our spouse and our kids. And so I think the Olma family is a good example. And I pray that they will one day be canonized. And hopefully the whole situation of the status of the youngest child will be made very clear, whether or not unborn or not. I think ultimately it doesn't matter. I think in both situations, they're part of the canonization. So, okay, I'll leave it there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.